Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the May 5 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Dale Durkles of AgriVisor out of Bloomington, Illinois, Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef AgriMarketing from Morton, Illinois, and Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may listen to our program anytime you'd like on demand on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
Let's get a list of questions from each of our panelists today. Dale Durkles, I think I'll start with you. What topics shall we cover?
Boy, you know, when you look at things, you know, the bigger question that still dogs my mind is, does everybody think the bigger commodity sector really has turned from down to up this year?
Okay. And Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef AgriMarketing.
Well, I think the main question on everyone's mind is, are we going to get another crack at corn here?
And Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting.
It's, at the end of the day, it's still about weather. And we'll see how that plays out.
Well, that seems like an odd comment from you, Dan, as we think about the cycles. So let's start there. I know you work through the fundamentals, but always looking forward with the cycles. Can you put the two of those together for me?
Well, I think in short run, I think the cycles are have a downward bias. Maybe could take us all the way through May. That doesn't necessarily mean that we go down. It's just that we may be more in a period of consolidation. But I think when you look on out as you go into June, July, August, then I got to be probably on the friendly side of the cyclical equation. But I know, you know, when you start talking about June, July, August rallies, that's pretty much going to have to be tied to crop problems somewhere in the United States or elsewhere, I guess, around the world. I do think the dollar currently is just a dead cat bounce. I think the dollar is in a long-term downtrend as we go on into a June, July low. I think the dollar may spin most of the month trying to retrace some of its loss over the past year or so, but I think it'll turn back down. So I think, I guess, from a cyclical point of view, my biases would be that May, during the month of May, commodities are going to struggle. I think they come to life again in June and July as the dollar begins to weaken again during June and July.
On the Kansas wheat tour, does it concern you that they found such a very large wheat crop this year? And does that give you any pause to think about what the weather might look like for the summer?
Well, the wheat is a strange commodity. I mean, the commercial grain trade wants to own wheat because they earn carry on that. So we kind of got a almost quasi wheat reserve that the commercial grain trade kind of likes to have a billion bushels in storage all the time, earning. So that doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to go lower in wheat. But you know, there's no doubt about it. We got plenty of wheat around, and it is it's going to be a competitive to corn and whatnot. But I don't see wheat any different than probably what it has been. It may be mostly a sideways market and commercials just continue to earn carrying charges on it and pay for their old grain bins that they don't normally use. They just put wheat in it, and that's kind of been the cash cow for a lot of grain companies over the past several years.
Dale Dirkholz, I want to ask you an historical question based on the knowledge you've gained over the decades. Wheat, I think, was one of those crops that led the commodity markets for a very long time because it's grown so many places across the planet. In this last uptick in acreage across the planet, and even here in the United States, that would have been replaced probably by corn and or soybeans. Has its importance to the marketplace changed very much?
Well, I don't know you want to say wheat's importance to the marketplace ever changes, because it is grown so many places, not only here in the U.S., but around the world. But also, wheat's really a universal grain. We tend to think of it here in the heart of the Midwest as being a food grain, or in the U.S. as being a food grain. But when you step out into the world, wheat is really a large dominant feed grain as well. As you look last year, you know, the 730 million ton production, we used 130 million ton of that purely as feed. So wheat's kind of this universal, and so it's important, really never goes away. But when you look at the fundamental structure, no matter if you're looking at it here in the U.S. or if you're looking at it in the world, it's probably the most abundant right now. And it's really kind of put wheat in the position of really depending upon movement in the other grains to really give it strength and carry it higher. So to me, wheat used to be a leader, but I think today it continues to go to the background unless you get extraordinarily tight like we were back in 07, 08.
This brings me to the other commodities in general. That would include things like crude and gold, corn, soybeans, bean meal, bean oil, palm oil. Has this sector changed from a bearish bias, and this is the question you asked, to something that's more friendly?
You know, the one thing when you look at it and looking at it broad base, and you look at the commodity indices themselves, and the one thing that when you look back at history that stands out, you tend to have a couple of cycles, a 3-year and a 9-year cycle pattern, low to low on them. And actually, we moved into the early part of that window right at the end of spring a year ago, or maybe last summer. And so when we actually saw the bottom in January, we were getting towards the end of that window. But when you look at the action out of the low that we put in January that we've had across the indices themselves, you really do get to feel that the bigger commodity trend has shifted. That kind of goes hand in hand with what Dan was saying about the dollar as well. And when you look at the dollar, to kind of reinforce what he's saying, it's also, interestingly enough, got a 3-year pattern to it. And it has a low due out somewhere in the middle part of 2017. So I agree with what he's saying. We may be having some strength and it could continue for a while, but the dollar probably generally is going to lose some ground. In the short term in commodity indices, though, we have a semi-annual cycle and that bottoms around July 1. So it may be that any big gains that we're going to get to the upside in commodities may end up coming after that instead of before, which kind of fits into what Dan was talking about too, albeit June may not be a very exciting month.
All right. So this brings me to the question that you asked, Chip, will we get another crack at corn? And I assume that you meant on the short term or sometime between now and, well, I don't know, July 15th or so.
Yeah, and I think to tie this all together, the great discussion on wheat and the cycles, I think the short answer is yes, for a lot of those same reasons. The funds, for whatever reason, I think part of this is cycle-related, like Dan was talking about. There is a lot of money, in my opinion, rotating out of the stock market and world equity markets. And where are they going to put the money? They put it in a bank. They're going to get negative interest rates in more than half the world. They're buying stuff that's cheap, and commodities are on sale right now. And so I don't think that the funds who wrote a big short position in corn for the better part of a year, they have a huge short position in wheat. They're kind of at the point of diminishing returns there. So I think, yes, we are going to get another crack at corn. And my only question is, it's not going to be easy. I think we will get a crack up towards 415 to 4.25 December. The question is, what do you do when that happens? Because this bean market is fresh in everyone's minds, and if there's any little spark and the funds and speculative money has a reason to buy corn, 415 may just be partway into this rally. So, I think right now is the time to be doing a lot of planning on, what levels you want to sell, how you want to sell it and protect, revenue. But absolutely, I think we're going to get another crack at this thing, and there may be quite a bit of excitement left in this commodity space, in particular our grains.
The last week of April, Darrell Good, in his weekly outlook, very clearly said to producers, you need to have a plan of action in place to pull the trigger on some sales this summer. Thought a little bit about that as well. What is the plan then, Chip, that they need to have in place?
Well, I think it varies. I don't know that there's one set plan. I think it varies by operation, depending on your risk tolerance, how much storage you have, when you need cash flow, when you typically sell that grain. I think it's a different answer for every operation. But I do think that I agree with what Darrell's saying. You need the plan, and that may include layering some offers on some cash sales or some hedge to your ives. Maybe that's buying puts at certain levels above the market. Maybe it's a minimum price where you're selling and attaching a call. I think the plan is different for every operation, but I think the important part is that you do have a plan.
Now let's deal with the bushels for corn that would have to go to the elevator. What's your plan?
At the moment, my bias is still to be somewhat patient, interestingly enough, and I realize this puts a lot of people under the gun, but when I look at the performance of the broader commodity sector, when I even look at the corn market itself, and Dan could address and talk about cycles there too, I think the thing that we have to acknowledge this year, and admittedly it came differently than people expected, the bean market shocked everyone. But if you had a grip on cycle parameters in beans, you had a step that kind of told you there could be something getting ready to happen, maybe not quite as dynamic as what we've seen, but something getting ready to happen. And I think the same thing's playing out in the corn market at this point. I think the early April low that we put in place on nearby corn futures was still a real valid low for a lot of different reasons. And I think if there's going to be something happen, I think it's going to be a surprise to the upside. So I'm still basically the attitude, I want to have some patience. I think I'll get a chance to sell some these corn maybe up around 4.25, if not more.
All right, Dan, the pitch is in your ballpark.
Well, this is the event, so mark it down. If I'm right, I'm going to be a hero. May 20th, mark that. That's a full moon. And if you go take a look at your 6 to 10 and 8 to 14 day weather forecast, it's calling for below normal temperatures. So due to low sunspot activity, I think there could be a frost scare that may have a lot of people scratching their heads. So that's the one I'm watching. It's 15 days out yet. I do know that. And anything can happen. But when you have low sunspot activity and the weather maps are starting to point to a cooling period of below normal temperatures around the full moon, I think you need to fasten your seatbelt. And that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a frost all the way down the Ohio River Valley, but any kind of late season frost like that would definitely have people scrambling to buy their shorts back. How about that one?
All right. Well, there we go. We've got that one marked down. I actually put it in my calendar. It's on the website now, under the calendar, on the calendar event. I think, yeah, it will be on because it's in my travel calendar.
Well,
it's
yeah,
on the WILL website. So it's there. It says, Wicker says, freeze May 20th.
Yeah.
I'll put up. I'll put Frost Watch.
I've been on this cool weather kick ever since the Beef House, and everybody's been talking hot weather, and I think you got cool weather up there because it's only 80 down here in Texas, man. It's supposed to be 90 now, and we're 10 degrees below normal. We enjoy this, man.
You know, going along with that, Todd, the other thing that's kind of still flying under the radar is still the second crop corn up in Brazil. And, you know, up there we're getting in the northern areas some spotty shower activity, but nothing great. And, you know, people aren't quick to write that crop down. You know, everybody looked at the IMEA, that's state Mato Grosso agency, last week and looked at acreage and went, well, it's up. But their estimate on yield was down 16%, and that's a lot deeper drop in terms of yield for that crop than what CONAB, the national agency, has been putting into the mix. And the bulk of your second crop corn is up in those northern areas. So, you know, you put something on like a light scattered frost like Dan was talking about, and about that same time we're going to start hearing more about, you know, that corn up in the northern parts of Brazil. It could turn into something pretty dynamic at that juncture.
So on a Thursday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report, this one's up on the website, and I posted this to the Twitter feed as well. Mike Tenora called it a severe drought in some of those second crop growing regions, Goiás in particular, but spreading northward from there. And so he termed it as a severe drought at this point in time. So it'll be interesting to see how that turns out. Okay, Dan, I'm going to come back to you on the cycles again. So we have your frost, but where do your cycles say we're headed?
Well, the cycles, like I said, they're just a tool. And, you know, my biases was that we would put in a late spring, you know, a late March, early April low, and then I thought the cycle was in position to kind of drive higher. I'm not necessarily going to put any prices on it, but I think it'll be hard to kill this market, you know, until you get on into that August, September timeframe. So I guess that tells me there's going to be weather issues somewhere along the line. Now, the other thing I stay up late at night and visit with my exporter global traders in Singapore, because that's their morning. So, but if you visit around to any export trader, they are very, very excited about moving a lot of corn and soybeans out of the United States in this 16-17 crop year. Now, and it's all because of the shrinking South American supplies, and, you know, everybody has an opinion or an estimate, but some of the numbers that I've heard from the exporters are quite friendly, that would be friendly toward prices. The problem that we got right now is I think there's been so much farmer selling on this rally that we had, which this is what they were waiting for. But that has end users, domestic end users, pretty well have got their needs covered through the summer. And I want to be a bit surprised if the commercial grain trade, now this may include country elevators, but I think the carryover is actually owned by commercials, and or they're eventually going to get it, the exporters, the processors, because there's no carrying charge in beans. So the country elevator that has it is going to move it, you know, on into the bigger ABCs and the small and the lowercase C ABCs. And they will be getting that ready for export. And the key is does China come in during August, September? And I think a lot of people are betting that China's going to come in. And that's when you're going to see export activity really take off, I think, is in late summer, early fall. And that could be a key driving force. But right now, the commercials pretty well got swamped with grain on this rally, both corn and soybeans. Now, farmers, I think, still probably own too much corn, but I think the beans are pretty well gone, and that's why we're at $10 rather than $9. So, least. But I think you're going to see exports. And see, you've already seen the export activity pick up, but I think that's just the beginning of it. I think that's just a warm-up. I think it's going to get quite hot as you get into late summer.
Chip Nellinger, he mentioned carryouts, 445 million bushels at this point from United States Department of Agriculture for soybeans at the end of this marketing year. Next week on Tuesday, USDA will release the next set, and it will include the first supply and demand tables for the coming marketing year, or the 16-17 crop, the one that's being put in the ground right now. Which of those numbers is going to change very much? Do you think that 445 is good, or will it shrink up, and will it all be in the hands of elevators, as Dan says?
Yeah, no, I think it could shrink up a little bit. Our exports have been very good. They've held up very well through this period where typically, you'd see South America and Brazil take over as a leader. They have, but we haven't seen the big hit to our exports. They slowed down some, but they've come roaring back. And I think that's part of the what we talked about earlier about maybe the crop being not quite as big in the southern hemisphere. So, you know, I think the other thing that's maybe caused some selling pressure is we're going to get the first look at new crop supply and demand tables. They use a trend line yield. They use the March 31st acreage number. It's going to be big on both corn and beans. It's going to be way over 2 billion bushels on corn, and it's going to be a big number on beans. And I think that's causing a little bit of this sell-off that we've seen the last 2 or 3 days. And it's one thing to write it on paper and see it. It's another thing, though, to get to the growing season and realize a huge crop. So, you know, I'm with what these guys are saying. I think you got to be looking. Don't panic on this break. We're going to have opportunities. Corn option volatility is historically very cheap still. So there are some real bargains out here on corn calls, not so much on bean calls, because we've gone through the volatility of this rally, and it's really expanded option volatility. But corn and wheat option volatility in the toilet right now, that means options are cheap. And that may be part of that plan that we talked about earlier, not for everybody, but that's something I think that needs to be closely considered right now.
Dale Durkles, what are you penciling in for both old and new crop carryouts for corn and beans?
For what the USDA will say or what I think they'll be?
Both.
The USDA, you know, that's always a nightmare. Yeah, they have to use the acreage numbers from the end of March. Other than that, all bets are off. You know, they can do things or whatever they want to with the demand estimates. And they don't necessarily have to use the trend line yield either. But I penciled down a corn carryout that they might show next week around 2.2 billion for corn. And on beans, I'm down around 410 or 415, I think. And that's just understanding where the USDA typically starts. In the end, though, I really think in the pit of everything, we're probably going to have new crop bean carryouts well down into the threes. And I think the corn itself, I wouldn't be surprised if we don't flirt somewhere around 1.5 to 1.6. I think all of this coming together in terms of weather, and, you know, I know you talked to Mike here a week ago, you know, and it's not only concerning the weather down, what's happening in Brazil right now and dryness up there, but this La Nina continues to fade and fade fast, or the El Nino, pardon me, continues to fade and fade fast. And, you know, that leaves us with a lot of weather risk going forward. And you go back, and the one year that was somewhat like this year in terms of the fade of the El Nino was the winter of 82-83. Spring of 83 tended to be a little bit on the wet side. You know, planting was a little slow, a little draggy, not necessarily really bad. When we got into June, it finally stopped raining, and when it stopped raining, and it turned blisteringly hot, too. So, yeah, I just see the bigger picture telling me there's a lot of risk of this thing turning around and really racing. And, you know, I take to heart what the beans have done, and I think to be complacent about the corn and not thinking something like that couldn't happen, I think is a little foolish.
Probably important on the 1983, and this number comes up, or year comes up a lot anymore as an analogous years to remember that was the year of the whole farm set aside. So the USDA figures on that one are going to be skewed pretty heavily by where those acres, and I don't have any idea where the acres were set aside, but in a lot of places. So trying to bring something out of USDA figures that might help you decide what's happening this year will be difficult, I would suspect.
Not if you look at the yield parameters, because that was a drought. And that was a drought that was as bad as the 88 drought when you look at it from a relative sense, yes. And it was hot along with it. If I go back and I go from, let's say, 168 bushel yield on corn back to, let's say, even down to 160, you know, I take 600 million bushel off the corn production just as a flat fell swoop, and I'm going back to where I'm at a 1.6 carryout. And if I take 8 bushels off, that's 5%. Classic drought is 10%. Then you start going down into the 150s. You know, that's why I say it's forget the acres. It's the weather that you have to watch. And Dan brought that up too.
And it doesn't actually have to happen. It just the market has to fear that.
Yep.
To get a really nice opportunity to get some sales on the books.
One observation, watching the market all these years, is approximately about every 10 years, everybody gets taken to the cleaners for missing the market. 1996 was the year of the famous July 240 hedge for the 97 crop year that never worked. And actually, a couple of grain companies went broke over that deal. That was the hedge to arrive fiasco. The jump in commodity prices in 7 and 8, there was a particular grain company that was pushing bin contracts with a commitment of 3 years of corn. And again, that was when everybody thought corn was never going to go above $2.40. Okay, we're 10 years away from that again, or 30 or 20 years away from 96. So now all of your grain companies, your uppercase ABCs and your lowercase ABCs, are all out promoting derivative type contracts to farmers, whether they're accumulator contracts or minimum maximums and averaging contracts. And I think since they're all in the same business, I look for that to blow up in everybody's face, whether or not it's going to be this year or next year, but I think that's going to blow up in everybody's face. So that's something I'm also watching here for 16, 17.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. I've seen a lot of that myself, and I agree that lower prices have bred a lot of complacency out here, and those premium offers and, you know, anything to get some extra premium out of the crop is getting more popular, and I'm not sure if it's the year for it. So I agree with Dan 100%.
Final words from each of you. I think I'll start with you, Dale Durkles of AgriVisor.
You know, I think people need to step back, you know, and everybody likes to look at the markets and talk about risk-reward, but, you know, the thing that often gets missed in the fray there is the word reward or opportunity. And to me, you know, if you were playing the game and looking for opportunity to come, if you knew the cycles like I watch them, Dan watches them, you saw some things that could be turning positive, and opportunity was certainly there in the beans. And I think there's going to be an opportunity to see some better prices of corn. So I'm being kind of patient.
Dan Zwicker.
I continue to be in the camp that Washington will not be able to stop printing money. I think they're just going to print money. You know, the Puerto Rico bailout's coming. The bailout to Illinois is coming. The bailout to California is coming. The bailout to New Jersey is coming. And I guess, will go along with this whole premise is that
we're going to see major currency devaluations, and I think people want to own real assets. And I think that is, you know, we're starting to see that, and I do think that we're basically, you know, in that mode. And I think a lot of world traders are looking for that because politicians can't do anything, and it's easier for them to just print money.
And Chip Nellinger.
Yeah, I agree with what both you guys said, and I'll go back to the plan. Have a plan, and big part of that plan includes knowing what your total cost of production is and what you need out of the crop, because if you don't know that, then you're kind of shooting in the dark. So I think now is the time to not panic, realize we're likely going to get another opportunity, but have a plan in place so that you can capture some of the upside but still lock in profitable levels. Because this most recent bean market showed it's impossible, even for guys like us that have been in the markets for a long time, nobody can tell you where the high or the low is coming exactly. And you want to have that opportunity and use the volatility to put it on your side. So have a plan. I can't underscore that enough this year.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Our thanks to our panelists this week, including Dale Durkles of AgriVisor out of Bloomington, Illinois, Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing from Morton, Illinois, and Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. You may find and listen to the whole program anytime you'd like on our website at WILLAG.org. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.